Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to an episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks. I don't know anymore, guys. I don't know how long this show can go on. I don't have much to say about this 3-hour Raw. I watched it all the way through on the old DVR. I don't have much to say about it, which means I'll probably talk for an hour and 20 minutes. So I guess let's get started. So the big deal is that WWE decided to do their version of the really fun thing that AEW has been doing by having the people who aren't wrestling, the roster for AEW, the people who aren't wrestling, they stand in the crowd and they interact with each other and they boo the people that they like and cheer the people that, you know, they boo the people that they don't like, and they cheer people that they do like. So you have MJF and Shawn Spears in the crowd, like betting on the matches, and that's fun. And the people who were there, like recurring characters like Pineapple Pete, gets a damn match out of the whole thing, you know, and it's fun. So WWE, of course, just strips all the fun out of it. Says, hey, what people at home like about the fact that there are wrestlers in the crowd at AEW is that they exist. They are there. And they do make noise. That is what the people at home like about people at ringside. And no, we like how they're being used and what they're doing, what they're saying. We like being able to recognize people in the crowd as being, you know, cheering for their friends and booing their enemies and all that kind of stuff. We like that. When you just have a bunch of people from the PC, most of whom we aren't familiar with, even if you watch NXT, and they're all standing there 6 feet apart, they make sure to mention that. So proper social distancing is being done. And they're behind a plexiglass, like you're at a hockey game. There's a, above the barricade is now a plexiglass. So I guess it's like a sneeze guard that you would see at the salad bar back when they had salad bars. Do they still have salad bars? They shouldn't have salad bars anymore. But salad bars you had used to back in the day, back in the before times, in the long, long ago, you would go to a restaurant. And at the restaurant, some of them would have a salad bar. It's like a long counter. Inset were all these little bins of lettuces and various other sundries, vegetables and toppings, just bacon and cheese and all manner of dressings, ranch, French, other dressings that don't end with ch, Caesar. And above this counter with all the lettuces and dressings, there was a clear plastic partition. So in case you were at the salad bar and sneezed, that sneeze would not get on all the lettuces and the dressings and the bacon. So that's what it looks like. It looks like all the wrestlers, all the wrestlers are at the salad bar, and all the PC folks in attendance are the lettuces and the dressings at the salad bar, not to be sneezed upon. So they're there. They exist. And they're cheering the way they were instructed to cheer. Meaning, boo all the heels and cheer all the bad guys. And there's no nuance whatsoever. And whoop-de-doo. Like, you might as well, like, Vince, don't do this. But you might as well, like, bust in a bunch of, like, 12-year-olds from the local middle school and said, hey, kids, stand around the ring, and when the good guy comes out, go, yay! When the bad guy comes out, go, boo! That's the level that we got. Just pipe in some friggin' sound if that's what you're gonna do. It was nice seeing them there, I guess. But there wasn't any real interaction or any personality to any of them. A few of them I recognized, but not a lot of them. And apparently, the icing on the cake is it apparently they were forced to stand through the entire taping. There are no chairs there. They removed all the chairs so everybody could stand unencumbered, 6 feet apart from each other. And so nobody was allowed to sit during the taping. Because that would look bad, I guess, people sitting at any point. Because nobody ever sits during a Raw taping in an arena. They're always standing up and cheering. That's what they say. That's what they say. Anyway, congratulations, WWE, for finally catching up to AEW in that thing. And maybe you'll actually have people we've ever heard of in the audience the next time, or people who have any relationship to the people who are in the ring. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there, but you can ignore me. It's the KO show, everybody. Kevin Owens in the ring. And he's going to introduce the participants in this triple threat for the women's title thingy. Right? He's interviewing Asuka, right? And then the people who are coming in are they're interlopers. They're invading Asuka's interview. And I liked it for a little while because it looked like they were actually going to go with the gimmick that I've been wanting forever, which is a Han and Chewie gimmick, where one of the two people in this gimmick, in this tag team or whatever, speaks English to the other person. And we understand what that person, the English speaker, is saying. But the other person in the tag team speaks some other language, in this case Japanese, to the first person. We don't understand the Japanese at home in America or the British Isles. But the English speaker in the ring does understand the Japanese. But rather than repeat, like have a conversation in Japanese, English speaker speaks English, Japanese speaker speaks Japanese, and they both understand each other. And you can find lots of fun ways to get gags out of it. There's a lot of good stuff if you go back and watch the original Star Wars trilogy of Han and Chewie bickering like an old married couple, where you only understand one half of the conversation. It's very funny. I think you could do it again. They started to do it with this. Then they gave up on it, so I was sad. Also, I was sad when Charlotte Flair comes out and she's like, why are you champion? They should have just given it to me. I should be champion of everything because I am the queen, says Charlotte. She says that, you've never been able to beat me, Asuka, which is, I guess, true. So Charlotte says that I should be champion, not you. And then Natalya comes out, and Natalya starts to apologize for throwing a tantrum. Like, Kevin Owens throws the chairs and the easel and everything out of the rings. I went ahead and did it for you, so you don't have to go to all the trouble. And Natalya's like, I want to apologize to you and to the KO show crew. That was not what I wanted to do. I didn't want to do that. I'm sorry. That was bad of me. I should not have done that. And Charlotte's like, I thought you were going to apologize for being irrelevant. I'm not irrelevant. I am the queen, says Charlotte. They didn't have Natalya apologize for even being in this match, considering she lost the last two that she was in versus Shayna Baszler, who's not in this match or on this show. So why even have those matches? I know they're doing a Charlotte. They're doing a Natty is turning heel slowly or doing something with Natty deal. But part of that can't be lose two matches pretty handily in back-to-back weeks and the following week get rewarded for those losses by being put in a number one contender's triple threat. That can't be part of the story because that doesn't make any fucking sense in any story. So don't do it. Just don't do it. This has been my TED talk entitled Don't Do It. Also, don't do it. Have Nia Jax anywhere near a microphone. I'm sorry. She doesn't sound right. She never has. The first time that I saw her speak way back in NXT, I was like, oh no, oh no, that's not how this person should sound. This person, that voice is the wrong voice to come out of that person. And every time she gets on a mic, I'm always reminded of that feeling. Oh well. Hey, Owens says, hey, whatever you do, Asuka, don't punch Nia Jax in the face. And Asuka didn't take KO's advice. And she punched Asuka in the face, and there was a brawl. Asuka fought Nia Jax, and Flair fought Natalya. I wonder what'll happen when they all were getting in the ring later. Hey, Apollo Crews, who tore every ligament in his knee 3 weeks ago and is totally fine now. I was wrong. I said that pulling him from the Money in the Bank ladder match was really shitty thing for them to do because it showed they weren't confident in him and that I did not believe they were actually going to follow up and give him an actual push coming back from Money in the Bank. And I was wrong. But I wasn't wrong about this. It's really stupid to have him injure himself, you know, like he did a moonsault off the apron to the outside, landed and tweaked his knee wrong. Then, later in the match, he tried to do some kind of jumping nothing from the top rope into the ring and landed wrong and tweaked his knee harder. And the match was called off and he was removed from the Money in the Bank ladder match. And then he's fine. Like, right after the Money in the Bank ladder match, like a week after that, so like he missed 2 weeks with a horrible knee injury that would have precluded him from ever competing in the ladder match. I don't know. That just seems funny to me that you would run that angle. It's disingenuous, and I don't like it. I also don't like that in this match with Andrade, they're trying to pull off he's getting vengeance on Andrade. Andrade didn't do anything to his knee. If Andrade had, my pitch was that after Cruz did it to himself and lost the match because the match was thrown out, lost his U.S. title opportunity. Then you have Andrade mercilessly attack the knee, put him in a single leg crab, just wrench on it. You do, like, you know, dragon screws to him over and over and over again. Do something really terrible to that knee. You know? So that Apollo Crews has something to be pissed at Andrade about, so that when he comes back from his injury, I figure, you know, 2 months down the line, nope, 2 weeks, then he actually has a real reason to be furious with Andrade. Now it's just like, you know, I'm angry with you because I injured my knee in a match that I was fighting you in that match. Damn it. It's just a weird deal. The match... Match is good. Inexplicably, during the match, they cut away to a backstage interview with Angel Garza, not interviewed by Charlie Caruso. If it had been Charlie Caruso interviewing him, I think she might have orgasmed so hard that she, like, melted into a puddle on the floor. Because anytime Angel Garza, who is engaged to a different woman, I will always remind you. Anytime he talks to Charlie Caruso is like, oh my God, Angel Garza's talking to me. Oh, Angel Garza. So this time he's interviewed by Kayla Braxton, and he explains to her that a match, a fight, is like making love to a beautiful woman. Your bodies collide, sometimes gently, but sometimes very, very forcefully. And they do it over and over and over and over again until the match is over. And then you want to do it all over again. That's a terrible impression of Angel Garza, and I apologize. It was an impression of Antonio Banderas, who I'm pretty sure... That's a bad impression of Antonio Banderas as well, but that's what I was going for, and I'm pretty sure that's who Vince thinks Angel Garza is. Not today's Antonio Banderas, but, you know, like the Antonio Banderas that Vince might remember if he ever watched any movies in the mid-90s starring Antonio Banderas. Because that's basically the deal he's doing. I remember my TED Talk where I said, don't do that. Don't cut away in the middle of your title match in which you know a title will be changing hands to interview a man who insists that wrestling matches are like sex. Don't do it. Thank you. This has been part two of my TED Talk entitled Don't Do It. It's weird. Why would you do that in the middle of this match? Like, interview him before the match. Later in the night. I don't know. It's a weird deal. But Cruz had his knee worked over by by Andrade all night. The whole match. And then, of course, he wins by basing for a toss powerbomb, then hitting a standing moonsault, and then a standing shooting star press, things that require knee power. Just once, I would like to see. You work over somebody's body part through the entire match. That means they can't use that body part to finish the match. Otherwise, all your ring psychology is bullshit. So don't do it. This has been part three of my TED Talk entitled Don't Do It. After the match, Cruz had a really, really good in-ring interview with Charlie. I guess Charlie couldn't be backstage to be hit on again by Angel Garza, who is engaged to another woman. because she had to be ringside to interview Apollo Crews after he beat Andrade. And Apollo Crews had a very heartfelt, bordering on emotional promo about how he worked so hard to get to this point and he's finally a champion WWE. And I will say, finally, yeah. Problem was, is they called him up way too early. We barely even got a chance to know who the guy was in NXT, like barely at all. He like had one takeover match, right? And then we're like, here you go. It just didn't work out because they didn't give him anything to do except for smiles a lot, is happy to be there. Like that does not, that doesn't work. That does not a character make. That's bad. Yeah, they could have done a lot of things with him. Here's how long ago they were screwing up shit with Apollo Crews. I pitched an angle for what they should do to get Crews over and keep him there. It involved him in a tag team with Mark Henry. I wrote it before I started working at Fightful. That was almost 4 years ago. That's how long they've been fucking up Apollo Crews on the main roster. Incidentally, the angle was that that Mark Henry was taking Apollo Crews under his wing, and Apollo ran afoul of Sheamus. And Sheamus was teaming with The Big Show because he was a fully active member of the roster 4 years ago. And so it became like a feud between Apollo Crews, the Young Buck, and Mark Henry versus Sheamus and Big Show. And there was a match where Mark Henry put his career on the line. And that match was accepted on behalf of Mark Henry by Apollo Crews, and it was Apollo Crews's fault that they lost the match, so Mark Henry had to retire. And then Apollo Crews got revenge on Sheamus, who had cheated to win that match in which Mark Henry had to retire. So he got revenge on Sheamus and Big Show, and Mark Henry gave him his blessing in the ring, like a big thing, like this is I endorse this kid. He's going to be great. And he was like, Mark Henry was kind of like his de facto manager for a while in this pitch and everything. Again, this is 4 years ago. I pitched it on a different website before Fightful existed. That's how long they've been fucking up Apollo Crews. Let's see how long he holds this U.S. title. I'm very happy for him. It's long overdue. They needed to push him. They always push him for like 2 weeks and then back off. They're finally pushing him. Good. He's really, really talented. There's something to work on to really get him to connect with an audience. But hey, the PC kids seem to really like him. That's good. I'm mixing in some stuff in this next one. Seth Rollins cut a promo to Rey Mysterio via a Rey Mysterio mask that he carried with him to the ring, like a trophy. Also, Austin Theory and Buddy Murphy were there. They said how awesome Seth Rollins was. But basically, Seth Rollins is carrying around Rey Mysterio mask, because it's not the Rey Mysterio mask. It's just a mask. It's just one of his masks. It's not the one he was wearing when he got his eye put out, or whatever happened to him in actuality. But he's like, Rey Mysterio made a sacrifice. He was chosen to be sacrificed for the greater good. Your little cult's getting wacky there, Seth. I am still afraid for Becky Lynch's safety. He's going very David Koresh. If you remember back that far, kids, Google it. K-O-R-E-S-H, David Koresh. Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. To be that crazy. Anyway, later in the night, they announce that next week on Raw, there will be a retirement ceremony for Rey Mysterio. He's going to have to retire. I hope he comes out wearing a salmon-colored luchador mask. Remember that Mark Henry retirement? Speaking of Mark Henry, that retirement thing where Mark Henry wore the salmon-colored mask and then he didn't actually retire. Oh, wouldn't that be fun? The Iconics came out. And remember the slap? Yeah. Well, I don't know if they're retconning it because it was a terrible idea or if they're just slow playing this. But Billy Kay apologizes for slapping Peyton Royce, and Peyton Royce apologizes for getting disqualified so recklessly. And then they're interrupted by Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. And the Iconics said, Nikki, oh, don't, you don't get to talk, Nikki. You're not actually part of this. You just get to stand there and be grateful that Alexa Bliss lets you be part of it. They call them a crazy lady and the office's favorite blonde. But then Nikki launches into some really very fiery promo about how nobody, I came here from Glasgow with nothing in my pocket at all. Not a dime. And I've had nobody was ever kind to me. And I'm thinking to myself, Killian Dane, your husband, Alexander Wolf, who's hanging out over there in England, and Eric Young, wherever the fuck Eric Young is, are all watching this episode going, whoa, what are we, chopped liver? Because she was a part of a stable called Sanity for a long time. And that was the biggest fuck up WWE ever pulled. Those guys were white hot in NXT, then got brought up to the main roster and done fucking nothing with. They brought the three dudes up, but not Nikki. When they finally brought her up, she was never part of the Sanity on the main roster. So basically she says, this is a really good friendship between me and Alexa Bliss. She keeps me grounded, and I think that I've taught her a little something about what it means to be a good friend, because Alexa Bliss has been a bad friend to a lot of people in the past. Mickey James, Nia Jax, etc. So it was really heartfelt and good, very well. I thought Nikki did a really good job with the promo. This is the whole promo is just there so they have some B-roll footage to splice into the inevitable Alexa Bliss has turned on Nikki Cross video package before their epic one-on-one clash at some pay-per-view in the future. Well, then, Peyton Royce and Billy Kay don't like to be told that they don't know anything about friendship. So they attack Nikki and Alexa, and they do the finisher to Nikki and hold the title belts and then drape them over the lifeless bodies of Nikki and Alexa. So I guess we're getting a rematch then. Drew McIntyre was a guest on MVP's VIP lounge. MVP, this is a really good, I like this detail. MVP says that when I had you on the VIP lounge before, it was before WrestleMania, and I offered to be your manager then. And, you know, Drew McIntyre's like, I don't need anybody to think for me. I don't need anybody to talk for me. And I don't want to kiss your ass. I don't need you kissing my ass. But MVP says, I knew when I had you on my show that time, I knew you were going to become WWE champion. And I also knew when that happened, I was going to have a hand in however you lost that title. I think that's really MVP's great at this. I think that it's so good that he's back. he's going to be an amazing manager for as long as they will have him. Lashley entered, and when Lashley was coming out, while that was happening, I guess MVP was distracted by his own client and got claymored in the face. So Lashley pulls MVP out of the ring, and he's standing there trying to get MVP to his feet. And Drew McIntyre has ripped his own shirt off and is frothing at the mouth. He is so angry that Bobby Lashley won't get in the ring and fight him. You get in the ring and fight me, Bobby Lashley. Show me the Bobby Lashley I know you are. Come on, get in the ring and fight me, Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley, fight me. Fight me, Bobby Lashley. Fight me, Bobby Lashley. Is the general thrust of his point. And he really wants to fight Bobby Lashley. I think that's interesting. Hey, Angel Garza has a match with Kevin Owens. He attacked Owens during Owens' ring entrance and attacked his knee and then worked on the knee forever. And then Owens wasn't able to battle back. And he was able, he couldn't base for the pop-up powerbomb. And he got caught in the wing clipper. And Angel Garza beat Kevin Owens. I'm cool with that. Angel Garza is really great. He's an up-and-comer. He's gonna be really good for this company for a long time. If they would only get rid of the weird gimmick where he thinks that fights are sex. And Kevin Owens, he's bulletproof. He can lose this match because he'll come back and he'll get a victory against Angel Garza down the line. I don't know if he needs to win this feud, but he'll come back. He'll be fine. Hey, so my daughter is 3.5, almost 3.5. She's at the age where she understands that a thing like knock-knock jokes exist, but she's really bad at them. But she does love being able to walk up and say, knock-knock. And then daddy has to say, who's there? And then she will say, it's Rosie. That's her name. And I'll say, Rosie who? She just say, Rosie me. We do that a lot. It's very cute. It's not cute the 85th time that day, but it's still pretty cute. She doesn't understand the rest of it, you know, but she loves knock knock who's there. She loves that. So in a few more months, when she understands real knock knock jokes, when she can tell her dad a few, I'm going to tell her one. Okay. Here's how it goes. I'm going to say knock, knock, and then you say who's there. And then I'm going to say the thing. Then you say the thing who, and then I'll do the punchline. Okay? All right, we're all – okay. So I'm going to say knock, knock, and then you at home, I'll give you time to say who's there. Okay, ready? Here we go. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods who?
Tiger, would you please stop doing these stupid segments with the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders? Tiger, would you please stop? Golf. You had them wear funny outfits and go golfing. And they were so bad at the golfing. Our life are so fat. He loves to eat turkey legs. Only the legs, though, not the rest of the turkey. But he loves turkey legs. Dawkins is wearing a purple shirt. And the Viking Raiders are wearing funny outfits, too. Montez Ford has some pants that have flowers on them. He's wearing golf pants with flowers on them. It's so funny. Ivar is so fat that he gets in the golf cart and all the golf cart's tires explode. So the guy who owns the golf club, he's really mad and he kicks him out of the golf club place. So then they have to go mini golfing. And it was at that point where I just kind of stopped watching because fuck this shit. It's not funny. I don't know why you're not. I mean, I understand you're building. You're building a level of. You're trying to recreate artificially the New Day and the Usos, like kind of like being opponents, like constant opponents, but they've got a measure of respect for each other. They're both baby faces, but they don't like they talk trash and they compete really hard against each other, but they have a fierce respect born out of years of competition. You can't just start that up by a weird basketball game where apparently Ivar can dunk, but he just didn't do it in the game. So that means he would have won, I guess. And then axe throwing, maybe. And at one point, I think in this thing, everybody hid something funny in a mini golf hole, like a wallet and a turkey leg. And then Ivar wanted to wrestle a gator for the turkey leg. And that's it. The one thing about this is that I made fun of Montez Ford's pants. They're really quite amazing. And they were made for him by his wife, Bianca Belair. And that's as close as she got to see airtime in this episode of Raw. You brought her up, and now she's working fucking main event. What? You brought her up so she could work main event, and the closest she gets to airing on Raw is that she was the seamstress for Montez Ford's comedy pants. They look great, by the way. Epically, went fantastically well made. She makes all of her own ring gear. And apparently, she also makes her husband's golf pants, which is not a thing you normally would need in wrestling, golf pants. But I guess it comes in handy to have a wife who can do that. Lana. At one point, MVP is sitting there on his phone, and a woman sidles up next to him. And it took me, I swear to you, 3.5 seconds. 1001, 1002, 1003, 1000, before I realized it was Lana. Because her skin tone was darker than MVP's. MVP is a light-skinned black man. But that's too much bronzer, Lana. That's too much bronzer. She's very upset because MVP is stealing her husband, I guess, is what we're... we're supposed to think, like, she doesn't want Lana Lashley to succeed unless she's his manager, I guess, is what we're... Because she's so selfish... Okay. She throws another tantrum when she says to MVP, we need to talk, and MVP says we don't, and he leaves, and then she gets angry and she screams a lot. She's insufferable and I hate her. Just Murphy and Austin Theory. How long did everybody just call him Theory? The Murphy Theory. And they defeated Aleister Black and Humberto Carrillo, who are now best friends, born out of literally days of fierce respect for Rey Mysterio, I guess. Humberto really likes Rey Mysterio because he's also Mexican-ish. And Aleister Black got thrown off a roof alongside Rey Mysterio, so they have that in common. And that's a bond you really can't break, you know? What they say, that once you get thrown off a roof with another man, well, there's no coming back from that. So it was basically Alberto Carrillo and Aleister Black beating up these two dudes until Aleister Black got shoved off the top rope onto the outside by Murphy. And then Carrillo kicked Murphy. And while he was doing that, Austin Theory, who was actually the legal man, snuck up on Carrillo and hit the ATL on Carrillo and got the pin. This is building, you know, friction between Murphy and Rollins, I think, eventually. But then Rollins got in the ring and directed traffic, Theory and Murphy holding him, and we're going to take him to the outside so they can sacrifice Carrillo to the eye gods, I guess. And not to the eye zod, to the eye gods. If you sacrifice Humberto Carrillo to the eye zod, you sacrifice him to a nice polo shirt you can get at JCPenney. That's a really, really, really weird, obscure reference. And I apologize. But the thing I do love about this is they had Black get into the ring. He's going to come down there and start swinging a chair at Rollins and his disciples. And Rollins is like, get back, stop. You take one more step and the kid loses an eye. And I was like, damn. And he's like, this was a really interesting, what I loved about it is that he says, take one more step and the kid loses an eye, drop the chair. Aleister Black drops the chair. Now kick it out of the ring. And Aleister Black does. And then, true to his word, which never happens, Seth Rollins let the kid go. Because Aleister Black listened to the warning. That's cool. I like that. I like that Seth Rollins said, hey, don't do this. If you do it, I'm going to hurt the kid. And then Aleister Black listened. And so that was the bargain that Seth Rollins made. So that's good. That's good. I like that happened. Now, the next thing you do is you have Seth Rollins make a bargain and Aleister Black listen to it. And then Seth Rollins now later does it anyway. That's probably what they're going to do. But I thought that was interesting, but he was ranting about sacrifices and everybody's got to be sacrificed. Greater good, greater great, greater amazing. So Aleister Black versus Seth Rollins is going to happen next week, and that could be good. Could be very good. It's weird that they're having that match on the same night as the Rey Mysterio retirement. I think that's a trap. But Edge had one of his super ultra cool ASMR, like really low talky, whispery, directly into the camera monologues that he's been having since the COVID. It's the best thing about WWE programming is Edge backstage, like having movie monologues directly into the camera. Randy, you caught me off guard. Yeah, speechless. Never happens. Like Edge has been taking acting classes because he's an actor and it shows. Like he's doing really good dramatic work. Like, I might not be able to beat you, Randy Orton, but I'm gonna try. It's all a man can do. And then my favorite part is after he does the long pause, and he says, "It's all a man can do." Then he doesn't look at the camera anymore. He looks down to the right, very pensive, furrowed brow. It's acting. So many times promos are like a dude just shouting about something that he wants. It's usually a championship or to beat some other dude up. But Edge is fucking acting. And this is good stuff. I like that a lot. I still don't like that they're calling it the greatest match ever. They've softened it a little bit. It's like, what some are saying might be, okay, that's better. I do want you to point to these people, though. The people who are saying this. I don't think they exist, except for maybe Charlie Caruso. Other than her, I don't know. I know you made Samoa Joe say it, which really is sad because every time you run that goddamn commercial for it, you have him saying it. Samoa Joe, this could very well be the greatest match of all time or whatever. And Samoa Joe doesn't think that. It's just something you made him say. Samoa Joe thinks that his match with Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles is the greatest match of all time. He's probably right. So MVP confronted the Street Profits, who were still in their golfing attire. What are you guys doing? Why are you a joke? And I guess MVP, my thing to you would be, you should probably talk to creative about that. That's why they're a joke, because creative is just, they have one big long epic rib on the entire Raw tag division, which, come to think of it, only includes the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders. I mean, it should also include Cedric Alexander and Ricochet, but after you 50-50 them with Vegemite on white bread, Shane Thorne and Brendan Frank, you're just shoving them aside, putting them on main event. They look so special, and you 50-50'd them. And now they're not even on TV. So now the entire Raw tag division is Street Profits and Viking Raiders, and they're locked in a battle of anything you can do, we can do better. Which, again, is a song from Annie Get Your Gun, a classic American musical. Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you. No, you can't. Yes, I can. No, you can't. Yes, I can. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da! Show tunes! Anyway. Street Profits talk trash to MVP about getting claymored, and then I guess they're having a match. Street Profits versus MVP and Lashley. It's not a title match or anything, because why would it be? Okay. Raw Women's Championship number one contender, Triple Threat. Asuka is on commentary for this. Asuka is the best part of this. Just saying. Nia Jax won because, of course, Nia Jax won. We all knew Nia Jax was going to win. It was a weird thing that you set this whole thing up to begin with, when you were obviously telegraphing that's who was going to be Asuka's opponent from the time that Nia Jax ruined Asuka's crowning party last week. Weird. Anyway. Early-ish in the match, Nia Jax is powerbombed through the announce table so that Natalya and Charlotte can have a one-on-one match for like 6 minutes. And you know it's bad when you have to hide the person who you're eventually going to make the number one contender? Later in the match, there was a Tower of Doom spot that was just really bad. Like Charlotte was up on the top and Nia Jax was going to superplex her. And Natalya slid in, got into powerbomb position, but Nia wasn't yet in superplex position. Like, Natalya got in there, and then Nia Jax got her legs, feet set, and she hooked up under the belt, and she got the thing up, and she got her like it was. Nia Jax puts Charlotte on the top. Nia Jax starts to kind of lumber into position. Natty goes, "Whoop! I'm here for this power bomb." And Nia's like, "That's great. I got about 15 more seconds of fidgeting around before I'm ready." So it made Nia look stupid that she didn't like just start wailing on the face of Natalya. And it made Natalya look bad for coming in too early. And also it made Natalya look bad because the Tower of Doom looked terrible. Nia Jax got power bombed directly into like sitting on her own ass. It was not good. Charlotte got Nia in the figure four, broken up. Figure eight, excuse me, broken up by Natalya, and then got Natalya in the figure eight, almost figure eight, figure six. This is more than the figure four, but not quite yet the full bridge. So, and then Nia Jax dropped a leg on her, the big old leg drop, and that was it for Charlotte, except for it wasn't. Because then she hit a Samoan drop on Natty and pinned her, and Charlotte was sliding into the ring to break up the pin, but didn't quite get there in time, which again is the old Hulk Hogan JBL kick out at 3.1. 1, 2, 3, kick out. Aw, damn, that was 2.5, damn it. Oh, ref, that was a fast count. It's just one way to make sure that nobody that everybody thinks you didn't actually lose. So Charlotte went to SmackDown last week. This is say the past weekish. She shows up on NXT and causes the match to be thrown out between Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley, and now she finds herself in a triple threat match again for the NXT championship at NXT TakeOver In Your House. 2 days after that, she's got a champion versus champion non-title match versus Bayley that she loses because Bayley grabs the ropes while rolling her up. And after that, after she kicks out again at 3.1, she just laughs to herself. Like, I can't believe Bayley got one over on me. And then 3 days after that, she's like, I almost got in to break up that pinfall. If I had, I would have eventually won this match. This is why the people who are like, why do you hate on Charlotte? I'm like, I don't hate on Charlotte. I just think they're intentionally making her look like Superwoman. And it's hard for me to argue that when she's losing matches, but she's losing matches in the most I didn't actually lose kind of way. By the way, speaking of which, remember the guy who said I didn't actually lose the Boneyard match, AJ Styles? He got traded from Raw to SmackDown. No word yet on what SmackDown is sending over to Raw. You'd think they'd mention that, but they didn't. They should. So yeah, we get Nia Jax versus Asuka at Backlash. Not Payback. Not Paylash and not Backback. Backlash. So here's the middle of the third hour talky stuff. R-Truth and Rob Gronkowski cut promos on each other via video. R-Truth seems to think that Tom Brady lost the title to Rob Gronkowski, and it says it's always tough when friends turn on you. I think R-Truth is doing his absolute level best with all of this shit. Sometimes he knocks it out of the park. He always makes it clever. But I just think they need to retire this damn title. It doesn't do anything anymore. and it may have ended the career of Ember Moon. I'm so angry. You guys, I'm so angry. Ember Moon tore an Achilles running around backstage during a let's chase the guy who's got the 24/7 title segment. She didn't tear her Achilles off the bone in a match. That would be like, okay, you know what? Things happen. But she did it chasing people around, running around in her ring gear backstage on a slick cement floor, tore her Achilles, ruptured her Achilles, and now she says she that might be the end of her career. Because they were like, hey, they would never dream of asking somebody who they were using, putting on TV, and was a part of a storyline. They'd never dream of asking somebody who they actually thought well of to run around and chase the 24/7 champion, because they know there's a chance something bad could happen and that person could get injured. So they didn't give a shit about Ember Moon. They asked her to do it because she's a good soldier. She did it. She tore her damn Achilles. And that could be it. And that sucks. The 24/7 title sucks. Rob Gronkowski cutting a promo. Listen, I know that I don't look at the camera. I do it for effect occasionally. It's kind of jarring. What I do is kind of watch my own thing talking. But Rob Gronkowski cutting a promo in which he is obviously reading from cue cards that are set just a few inches below the camera. So again, every time we do one of these, an episode, I always do something that is only for the people who watch the YouTube video. If you're listening to this on the podcast, I appreciate your support, but the video has things in it that you will only get on the video. So this is Rob Gronkowski cutting a promo on R-Truth, obviously reading his lines on a cue card by looking below the camera and moving his eyes back and forth to read them. Okay, here we go. My name is Rob Gronkowski. I am the Gronk. I am the 24/7 champion. And I will defend this championship against you, R-Truth, or should I say, R-Lies. And that was it. That was he said some other stuff. I don't know. I'm just so done with the 24/7 thing. I was a long time ago. So they did this thing like Ric Flair is going to talk to us about the greatest wrestling match ever. And I was like, Ric Flair's here? You didn't make the old guy travel during this, did you? No. Oh, well, then it's a live Skype shot. It should probably have promoted this at some point, because it was like, hey, coming back from the break, we're going to talk to Ric Flair. You are? Oh, wow. He didn't talk to Ric Flair. He recorded something and sent it in via email. And what he did was go, greatest wrestling match ever. Sure is the greatest wrestling match ever. I'm one of the greatest wrestlers ever, and I've had more great wrestling matches than everybody, but I've never had the greatest wrestling match ever. That's going to be this one. Who's going to win? Randy Orton, because I was in a faction with him, and I should probably pick him, right? And they cut away from it as he was going, woo, like the thing froze. And I'm like, oh, that's obviously not live. Obviously not live. It's Liv. Liv Morgan, who's doing another one of her promos where she's like, I don't know who I am. Listen, honey, when you find out who you are, when creative tells you who you are, then come back and you tell me who you are. But until this point, I don't. I don't care. Sorry. I think she should have been in this triple threat match between Natalya, Charlotte, and Nia Jax? Yeah, I do. Anybody but Natalya. Shayna Baszler definitely should have been over Natalya, but I take Liv Morgan over Natalya. Doesn't mean I care about these promos where she's like, I don't know who I am. Let me talk about it for 2 minutes. I don't know how this is the main event, you guys. I don't. It's so obvious. Like, Drew McIntyre's leaving and then interrupted by Charlie, who says, hey, or Kayla, one of the two. Charla. Kaylee. Kaylee Caraxton. And they... One of the two says, hey, did you hear Bobby Lashley and MVP are having a match with the Street Profits? And Drew's like, oh, well, I was going to leave, but I think I forgot something in the locker room. So I'm going to go back to the locker room and get that thing that I totally forgot. And I'm like, well, if you weren't telegraphing the ending already, having Street Profits versus MVP and Lashley in a non-title match as the main event of your show just screams disqualification, run-in, brawl, whatever, all three. Because at one point, Lashley gets pissed at Montez Ford for trying to win the match. So he is the non-legal man. That's 3 weeks in a row now. The non-legal man gets in the ring and he puts Montez Ford in this full Nelson and won't let go. So the ref throws it out. 3 weeks in a row, they've done the legal man attacks. Wait, illegal man attacks the legal man and therefore no more tag match. So before that, they were all set to, you know, they hit the old sky high power bomb, which I guess is now called the cash out. And I thought the cash out was the sky high power bomb into the frog splash, but now the sky high power bomb is now called the cash out, and the frog splash is now called from the heavens. I did not realize that, but that's what it is. So all that gets done to Lashley, not to Lashley, to MVP, not to Lashley, obviously. And then Lashley gets in and is all pissy about it. So the Street Profits were going to win, thank God, until Lashley got a bug up his butt. And then Drew McIntyre comes in and he attacks Bobby Lashley, and they have a brawl on the outside that's shot crazily by Kevin Dunn. Like, it really hurts your eyes and your stomach to watch it. And then a couple of PC people, like, they don't jump the barricade because they can't, because the plexiglass is there. So two of them who aren't at ringside, thank God they got to sit for 3 hours. That was nice. And then that, because I wanted to be fresh, so that when they ran down to the ring and got headbutted by Drew McIntyre, they at least had fresh legs. And then there's a pull-apart brawl. Pull-apart, question mark. Brawl, pull-apart, question mark. Brawl. So, yeah, two more weeks of this, and then we get Backlash, where the greatest wrestling match ever will take place, and also some other stuff. It's so weird to, like, say beforehand, greatest wrestling match ever, because by rule, then everything else on the card isn't going to be as good. So then you got to, like, book it to be that way. You got to book it so the other things on the card look like crap, I guess. Well, luckily that'll just probably happen on its own. Anyway, that was Raw. This has been Sour Graps, and I've been your host, Alex Pulowski. Everything sucks.